This is a recording from the first degrowth conference in North America, held in Vancouver, Canada, from April 29th to May 1st, 2010. Each speaker is introduced by author Rex Wehler.
Graphs are a way of talking about change over time. So when we're talking about stabilizing and reducing human population, we're not talking about going out on the streets and killing people. We're talking about things such as women's rights, contraception available, global education to help families reduce their numbers and help communities stabilize themselves. Now, one person that has done a lot of work in this and has also done some work in looking at what he calls time blindness, our inability to see how these changes magnify over time, is Jack Alpert. Jack worked with General Motors, did a lot of work on trying to communicate to people to use safety belts. He found out how difficult that was, and he has since gotten into studying how people process important information. Those of you who are parents know how many times you have to tell your children something? Many times. And how do people actually process this important information that we're hearing tonight, and how do they start inculcating these ideas into the way they live their lives? Jack also did some work at Cisco Systems as a training manager. He now works with the Stanford Knowledge Integration Laboratory called SKILL, and he wants to talk to you a little bit tonight about what he thinks is a sustainable human population level. Now, remember, we're not talking about going out and killing anyone. We're talking about finding ways that we can reduce our population over a period of time so that in 100 years we're not on a planet that's going nuts with 15 billion people, half of them starving to death. We're on a planet with a lot less people living good, rich, happy lives. Ladies and gentlemen, Jack Alpert.
This is a great group.
It's a great conference, and I'm really glad to be here.
This thing about seatbelts, I put them in cars in 1968, and people wouldn't wear them. And made me feel pretty bad, because we made the probability of dying in your car go from 1 in 200 to 1 in 26,000. So it was a no-brainer. Put your seatbelt on, you wouldn't die in a car accident. Well, the thing that really got me out of engineering was the fact that polio vaccines did exactly the same thing. So polio vaccines did the same thing. And the difference was that the same mother that would get her kids vaccinated wouldn't put on her seatbelt. And I quit engineering and I started to study how people gather, process, and evaluate information. And what I learned is they can't connect the dots. Okay, so I wrote an interactive computer exam for sixth graders. And it was a little problem where how things played out was the important way to figure out how to make the decisions in the first year. So you made decisions over the consecutive years. Anyway, they didn't do very well. And since I was at Stanford, I gave it to a bunch of Stanford students. Now, you got to believe that the Stanford students are brighter than the average Palo Alto sixth grader, but they didn't do very well either. So then I gave it to a bunch of Stanford faculty. And you can imagine that they didn't love me because the results were, and this was prototyping. We're all prototype. And because it's Stanford, I gathered together all the Nobel laureates and all the Wolf Prize winners, and from the scores at this preliminary evaluation, the Nobel laureates and the sixth graders are about the same in looking at the future, okay, and looking at the present, taking the structure, pushing it out forward and saying, oh, I don't want to go there. So we're all about the same. Okay, so that's what I did for 40 years. And it takes a little time to explain it. It's called How We Deal with Nonlinearity. So I'm not going to do that tonight. I just wanted you to know that we're all kind of crippled. What you heard from, let's see, David, Anita, Rick, and Bill was, it's kind of black out there. Our future doesn't look very good. But I didn't see anybody run for the exits because they wanted to change their lives. So what I want to do tonight is show you a little video that says, when I run the numbers for how many people could live in the world and have it be sustainable and peaceful, it looks like this. And I'm going to try and make you think about how many people can actually live in the world.
Species extinction is caused by too many people. Depleted fisheries caused by
too many people. Starvation, too many people. In fact, overpopulation causes genocide, migration, and probably climate change. What number is not too many? My estimate, below 100 million. How did I arrive at this number? We know that rich people consume a lot. Poor people consume very little. Most of us fall somewhere in between. All of us together create a burden of, let's say, 20 footprint units. The richest 20% create 16 of these. The remaining 5.1 billion create only 4 units. I'm sure you know the world's population is greater than 6.4 billion. Using this number eliminates a need for a calculator, and the conclusions will be the same. The average home of the richest 20% looks like this. The poorest 80%, more like this. This injustice creates social conflict. However, expectations that the 5 billion poor people will achieve the average rich well-being keeps the social conflict from exploding in our faces. What if they succeed? Then the human footprint increases from 20 to 80. 20 footprint units is already enough to exhaust and degrade Earth. 80 would do it 4 times faster. If a more equal distribution of the Earth's bounty is necessary to limit conflict, it must be facilitated without increasing this total human footprint. Either each person in the rich group must reassign 75% of his or her consumption to the poor, or global population must contract to a quarter its present size. To attain a more peaceful world requires lowering the population to 1.6 billion. However, even if we could attain a global population of 1.6 billion people, the sum of all these numbers, and, for example, Canada had 8 million instead of 32, England had 15 instead of 60, and China had 320 million instead of 1.3 billion, and all of these other regions had one quarter of their populations. Notice the United States had 87 million rather than 350. And each of these countries enjoyed an average North American lifestyle. This new world would not be eco-sustainable. We would still be consuming our fossil fuel and water to extinction. We would still be reducing production of renewables like fisheries. And we would still be reducing the natural recycling and absorption capacities of our ecosystem. The world's sustainable population would be smaller. How much smaller? There are many ways to calculate the world's sustainable population. Take any non-renewable supporting resource, for example, oil, and ask how long it would last for different populations. Our oil would last 500 years if we had 100 million. Take any non-exhaustible resource, for example, hydropower, and ask how many people will it support if other energy resources, for example, fossil fuels, are not used. The answer is near 100 million. Take any renewing resource and ask how many people it can support if the usage rate does not degrade its supply. Let me provide calculations using soil as an example. Most farming activities lower both soil quality and quantity. Plowing and runoff erode soil. Crops mine the soil's minerals. Therefore, soil is lost in the farming process. All would be gone if it were not for the natural processes that generate new soil. Sustainable farming practice means the amount of soil lost equals the amount created. However, on average, today's farming techniques lose soil 16 times faster than Mother Nature makes it. That is, it would take 15 years to replace what was lost in a year of farming. On average, to be sustainable, after an acre is farmed, it would have to remain fallow for 15 years. This means we can farm only 1/16 of our land. We can feed only 1/16 of the 1.6 billion people. The peaceful population living at North American lifestyles with sustainable soil practices is 100 million people. Wait a minute. We're not finished. Even a reduction to 100 million is not sustainable. Humans strive for better well-being. For example, people prefer to live longer. An 86-year lifespan is better than an 85-year lifespan. However, an individual who lives 1 year longer increases his lifetime footprint by a little over 1%.
Just to accommodate this one-year increase in lifespan, the population of 100 million would have to decrease to 99 million. There are thousands of lifestyle improvements that would require similar decreases in population. As long as people yearn for eco-sustainability, peace through social justice, and ever-increasing well-being, the global population will have to continue to decrease below 100 million.
Thank you. I didn't do this to rain on this party. It just means that the how far we have to go to get rid of the problems that we have today is a very long way from where we are now. And we should look consciously at what we're proposing and see if it gets us anywhere near what we're wishing for. Thank you.
That was Speaker Jack Alpert, introduced by Rex Whaler. This recording comes from the first degrowth conference in North America, held in Vancouver, Canada, from April 29th to May 1st, 2010. Find more audio on the Economic Crisis page in the Audio On Demand menu at ecoshock.org. Find out more about this conference at www.d-growth.com/Vancouver.